time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
The Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror!
Thank God it's...
Hello, hirsute horror hipsters. It's the Chris Keeper here, and it's Friday. And I'm going out ironic disco dancing with all my friends. Who am I kidding? It's just an excuse for me to wear my John Travolta suit. Oh, do you like it? It's made of real John Travolta. Anyway, I'm just gonna stay home and watch a movie. Tonight it's Friday the 13th, part 6. And it's a wonderful one, because Jason returns, as if there was any question. All right, well, fuck my life.
Hello, and welcome to the Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror. Terror! Hello! I'm Chris Honeywell.
Terror, please. Oh, no.
And we are... back after last month, and our guest Michael Bailey, we are moving on through the Friday the 13th, this time to Friday the 13th, part 6, Jason Lives. And you know who else lives? My other three co-hosts. We have the undead Chris Tyler.
Hey, yeah, I just gotta, hold on, I just gotta unfold myself. Wait, none of you guys watch the fucking movie? Jesus Christ.
We've got Night of the Living Sean Engel.
Hey everyone, how's it going tonight?
And we have Luke of the Dead.
I'm a teenage Frankenstein.
I should have done that, dick.
I gave you the opportunity to go first.
Yes,
man.
Yes, you did. It's all on me.
So, whoo-wee, we're sort of getting into the... How many Friday the 13th movies are there? Are we right in the middle, about?
11... The 11th one's the remake.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's 10 of the original series, then Freddy vs. Jason, then the remake.
Oh, yeah, so there's 12, yeah, I forgot. 12, technically. Dead okay. Center.
So we're dead... Yeah, Dead Center if you count the remake, so... But this,
The Eye of the Storm...
Yeah, I talked about last time a little bit that you can kind of break the F-13s up into phases. And I consider this the start of the third phase of Friday the 13th. After, one and two were kind of their own thing. Mm-hmm. Four and five had a lot of similarities. Well, six kind of starts the zombie Jason phase.
Yes!
Six, seven, eight kind of make up that cycle in my head. And this film is... released in about a year after part five, and the story goes that part five did decent business, but didn't do nearly as good as Paramount had hoped, and so they brought in writer and director Tom McLaughlin, who was charged with making a film that was slightly more palatable. The word that Paramount used to describe five was coarse. He was brought in to make a slightly more palatable film. And so he brought some new elements into the series and really kind of saved it, a lot of people would say, as far as this depiction of Jason being extremely popular.
Yeah, my favorite one.
This is your favorite one?
This is my favorite Friday.
Of all of them.
Yeah.
This one is, it seems like, to the phase that the zombie Jason, I almost see it as like where it... It's like the phase of acceptance, maybe, and then into pandering. But I don't want to make it sound bad. It was acknowledging that the people, there were several just overt nods and winks saying to the audience, we know why you're here.
Yeah.
You want to see people get killed.
Oh, yeah.
And you're coming here to have fun. You're coming here to get a whole group of people, and your girlfriend wants to jump, and people want to laugh at something really stupid, and then jump at something really violent.
There was a lot of metatextual stuff.
Oh, so many jokes.
You know, especially at the beginning, where you've got the people in the car who say, you know, see Jason in the middle of the road and their headlights and go, I've seen too many horror films. I know what happens next. Back up. So, yes, they're obviously, the tropes have been set. We know what's going on, and they're just having fun with
this. Oh, I mean, they give it a James Bond beginning.
I know, it's awesome!
Oh, good lord. Yes,
the one I absolutely love is the character of Martin, the caretaker. And
what do you think I am, a fathead?
Right at the camera. Some folks got a strange idea entertainment.
Exactly, yeah.
Love it.
And what's funny, he wasn't supposed to die. His death and the couple that just got engaged in the forest were added after the film had originally wrapped, and they wanted more violence in the film. The film wasn't violent enough, so they added the death of Martin and the couple.
Yeah, that's one of the things I do have to say negative about this film. The violence was there, but the gore was not. This
I
was
think
perhaps
they were getting
one of the
ready for TV.
That could have been. Maybe they were getting more money on, you know, showings on, you know, having it produced for TV. Because, yeah, the gore effects on this were pretty limited. I mean, you saw, you know, a guy with a knife through his head. You saw severed limbs. But I think just maybe the loss of, was it Savini who came back for the fifth one?
Fourth.
For the fourth one? Yeah, it didn't have that same sort of, you know, gore effects going
visceral,
on.
So yeah, like people getting halved when they're walking on their hands and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's not as visceral, but I mean, there are some inventive kills. I mean, it's got two more of my favorite kills are in this one.
I mean, McLaughlin, you know, what he stated that he was going to do was deliver a different kind of Friday the 13th film, and this one's always go down. Is this the one that has no nudity and had such, was so, and this is a relative term, was so non-violent that they had to, you know, all the other films up to this point had to be edited for violence to avoid an X. Whereas this one, they asked to add more gore and violence to the film. That, you know, just to appease the studio, because that's what they wanted. They said this film's not extreme enough.
And I mean, you can definitely see it.
Yeah, during the incredibly, incredibly 80s sex scene. Possibly the single most 80s sex scene ever filmed.
Yeah.
No, there's no nudity in the sex scene. She's got on her you know, aerobics workout gear there. And apparently, you know, they asked him, can you get her to take her shirt off? And so he apparently McLaughlin didn't even want to do it. So he kind of asked, and she said no. And he goes, okay, well, I guess we can't do it. You know, it's trying to make it more palatable, I think. I don't know. Perhaps for TV, perhaps just for general audiences, you know? I just something that, say, that it becomes a party film now.
It's probably why I like it so much.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the scene you referenced earlier, Hero, with what do you think I am, a fart head?
Yeah!
And then it cuts, cold cut to a whole group of little kids saying, yeah.
I love it. I love all the humor in this one. The girl on the bed reading Sat, No Exit.
Yes,
I'm like,
yes.
This is amazing. This shit is amazing.
I love the kids. It's like, so what
did you want to be? I loved it. It makes me chuckle. And I mean, like, it's so perfectly 80s. Everything about it is just the Alice Cooper songs on the soundtrack. I mean,
thank God they had an Alice Cooper in there, because it was just also filled with the most generic. That sex song wasn't, that they were having sex to, wasn't Alice Cooper, was it?
No. Yeah.
Okay, because if it was, it was his saddest song ever.
No, that's Only Women Bleed.
Yeah, it's a pretty sad song. But, you know, in Cooper, the Koopa's got three songs in this movie. I mean,
awesome.
The music video for The Man Behind the Mask had took place in the movie. Like, it had clips from the movie in it, and yeah. Jason coming out of the screen to menace the the film goers. So it's synergy. Especially compared to 5. And 5 was such a geek show in so many ways, with just so much violence and so many gory kills and stuff, that, you know, could you have continued on that path and still remained profitable? Or did you have to try and reach out to a different audience? Apparently Paramount felt the latter instead of the former. And, you know, it worked. So it was a gamble, but it paid off, because this film was hugely popular with the MTV crowd. And you see the same sort of thing happen with its contemporaries, especially Nightmare. Nightmare along the same paths as Friday, which is why we're always inexorably linked.
Yeah, Nightmare 4 is the MTV nightmare.
But, yeah, this.
But 3 even had Dokken, you know?
Well, I mean, that's just awesome.
It's just awesome, yes.
You know, we mentioned that this had a lot of 80s references, and yes, this is perhaps the encapsulation of the 80s in a horror film. Everything about this movie just screams the 1980s. And I think for me, that was one of the things that kind of... Again, it was one of the things that just kind of didn't take me out of it, but it was one of the things that I was just kind of annoyed with. Because I love some things in the 80s, but this was just... It played too much to it for me. I don't know why. And I think the fact that I enjoyed 5 so much, and I enjoyed the character of Tommy in that one so much, that his turn from that movie to this one was such a departure, that it also, that was one of the other things that irked me. The fact that in number 5, Tommy was this sort of very
seething really anger.
Yeah, he was an aggressive person. He didn't take crap off people. If someone mouthed off to him, he'd beat the crap out of you. In this one, he's sort of a lisping, you know, just ineffectual 80s.
He's kind of hysterical.
Yeah, he's a sort of nattering, prancing ninny boy. And I just didn't like that portrayal of this character that, you know, in the prior movie was considered to be the one who's going to take out Jason. He's the one who's going to save everyone. And yeah, this one, he's just, I don't know. Maybe it's just me.
Yeah, I mean, it's not, it's Tommy's movie, but it's, you know, it's Jason's movie. Let's be honest.
Yeah. You know? Part of that, I think, was they had to walk back from the ending of 5, because part of the reason that Tommy is so driven and so, you know, just kind of man on the edge in 5 is that at the end of it, he's got to be over that edge. Because at the end of 5, remember, Tommy has the mask and he's now a killer. He's lost it nuts. And they had to walk back from that because they didn't want to use that. So could you have had Tommy be the same driven, maniacal guy? I don't know. I don't know that this film works in the same way for him to be, you know, because he gets locked up for a good, you know, good third of the movie, it seems like. So, I mean, I get what you're saying, Sean. I'm right there with you on it. Would this have been more interesting with the very driven Tommy from the 5th one? It would have been much different, I can tell you that. How it would have worked out is you know, it's hard to say. But it would have been much different to see a much angrier Tommy out there, you know, hunting, you know, dealing with Jason, a resurrected Jason.
Well, and I think in the beginning, he was kind of driven in this movie because he wanted to go and make sure that Jason was dead. Unfortunately, he ended up through whatever mystical means, or maybe it was, you know, Barry Allen actually coming down and being lightning bolt.
Yeah.
Sorry, that was a shit.
That's cool. Go for it.
But the, you know, the bringing him back. So I like the idea at the beginning. He was trying to make sure that Jason was dead. Yeah. But throughout the rest of the movie, he just didn't have that same aggressive tendency that he showed, you know, during the 5th movie. So that's probably the one thing that detracts the movie. The one thing I would say I was detracted by in the movie.
You know what is funny talking about the opening is that you really think about it, in a lot of ways, it's kind of the same opening as 5. It's people digging up Jason Voorhees' grave.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And people who dig him up die. So,
yeah,
and this time it's not a dream.
It's all a dream, man. The Jason being resurrected, I thought was really funny, because McLaughlin, what he said he wanted to do was to kind of add some classical universal monsters elements.
Yeah.
So the idea of Jason Voorhees being a lumbering, you know, monster brought to life by electricity harkens back, of course, to the Frankenstein films from Universal. And then even the idea of returning him to where he was born, he was influenced by the idea that a vampire had to be buried in soil taken from where he was born, you know. So it was adding these kind of classical elements to what had been a very modernist series. You know, Friday the 13th, for whatever, you know, production values it had or didn't have, was something that reflected the current era, you know. It wasn't, there was nothing timeless about it. And in this film, again, there's not much timeless from a lot of the trappings of the film, because it's so decidedly 80s. But these elements to the Jason character, I think, helped him transcend from being the Bubba to being the icon that right. he is. You know?
Yeah.
Well, in mm-hmm. there's a trope of the killer redneck.
Yeah.
And then there's Jason. It's sort of like there's vampires and then there's Dracula. You know, so they were trying to put him into the Dracula, so to where he's the iconic, unstoppable. Yeah. You know, force. He's sort of like the killer redneck mixed with the Shape from Halloween.
Oh yeah, and think about, you know, like we talked about Nightmare. Freddy Krueger came out of the gate as this memorable, unique, individualistic character, and it's taken Jason, you know, essentially six films if you count five as being developing the character of Jason Voorhees to get there, you know, and inquired a sea change in his origins to pull it off. But it works and it sticks. And this is what, you know, it's rare for people to think of the pre-6 Jason Voorhees now. You know, you think of Jason Voorhees as the big lumbering dead guy with the machete, you know.
The lumbering dead guy that can always be behind you, even though he was nowhere near you, which a lot of people have a problem with. I love it.
above you, whatever.
I never had a problem with it as long as he's in and around Crystal Lake. When he in a couple of shows when he does it in Manhattan, that's when I have a problem with it.
Oh, we'll get there eventually. Yeah.
I do like the fact that this time out, and this I just found this kind of amusing. Jason tends to have a utility belt in this. It's
he looks like a cable technician.
He does. One of the paintball guys.
Yeah.
Oh, that's where it came from. That makes sense.
The one guy that was super eager. Who I think was named Roy, which I thought was hilarious, that they made a point of killing a guy named Roy in this movie. There's some great name dropping throughout this film.
Karloff.
Yeah. The grocery store
named Karloff.
Garris.
Cunningham Road, you know, Carpenter is the next town over, you know. Just some great, just little horror name references for people to be out there. This one I had to really laugh at. This is a very obscure kind of reference. The girl Sissy, who is the girl who teaches the Camp Blood card game, who gets yanked out the window and her head twisted off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Actually, originally her death just showed her going to the window and then Jason yanking her out, and then we didn't find out what happened to her till Megan found her head at the end of the film, which would have been much funnier. But she is played by an actress named Renee Jones. And
from
Days of Our Lives.
I knew it, brother.
Lexi Carver, you know, wife of police chief Abe Carver, illegitimate daughter of Stefano DiMera on Days of Our Lives.
Wasn't everybody an illegitimate child of Stefano?
I think pretty much everybody was. Him or Victor, one of the two. And Victor Kiriakis. And she has the same kind of delivery, the same diction. I just keep expecting her to, you know, like to start throwing about how much money she has or something like that, because Lexi Carver is kind of a rich bitch. But I just, as far as it's like, who is this? I know who this is.
Yeah.
And at him, it's like, that's Lexi Carver. I'm like, that's hilarious.
We totally outed ourselves, by the way, by talking about this.
Yeah, I was going to say, how do you guys know this much about
Shut up, Sean.
Lives?
I have the excuse that when my wife and I first met, I got into watching the soaps she was watching, so I got that going for me. But no, I mean, I was.
Yeah,
I'll
give you that, Luke. You know, you've got a wife, Chris.
I have a mother. Dude, what the hell? I have a mother and two older sisters.
Right.
Nothing to do during the summer.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now there would have been
nothing.
I tell you this.
I could have went swimming, I guess, but you know, Lexi Carver.
I want to say this. If John Black had shown up to kick Jason in the throat, that would have been something right there.
Nah, Patch.
Patch, yeah. He played harmonica to get in a fight with him.
All right, enough
about
Dave.
Honeywell and I are just shrugging our shoulders.
Oh, right wow. Now. I'm blown away.
And I get about 10% of the population going, yes, that'd have been so cool.
Yeah, yeah.
But let's move on past Days of Our Lives. So again, a Friday the 13th film in Salem. Why not? So, Kickstarter, right there. There we go.
All right, another Kickstarter. But it does trade, like we were saying, the gore for the more palatableness. But I mean, from that, it got a sheriff getting bent in half.
Sheriff Donald Pleasance mixed with John Carpenter.
Basically, yeah.
Or not Donald Pleasance, Donald Sutherland. Sorry.
Yes. Another great mustache. and one of my other favorite ones is the chick's face right into the side of the camper. Just because the sound it makes and the way they vacuum pulled that thing to make that. I love it, because it also, you know, the thing goes off the road.
That's completely cartoony, too. There's just no way that...
No, but it's like that. But it's awesome.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And that.
I mean, could they have done it where her head just exploded against the wall? Yeah. But we got a vacuum form face. I love it.
And that vacuum form thing was a thing that they used quite effectively in the Nightmare on Elm Street movies as well. So that was a... I don't know whether this came prior to that, but it certainly was one of the things that, you know, they worked into the Nightmare movies.
And that art scene in general is so good, from, like I said, the incredibly 80s sex scene to one of my favorite jokes. You gotta last to the end of the song, then the power comes out. Really? He's like, wasn't that the end of the song?
Yeah, I mean, she wanted a whole 10 minutes. I'm like, come on, dude. Teenagers. From that crash, though, you get that awesome hero shot of Jason busting the side of the friggin' door off and jumping out. I'm like, it's Jason's movie. It's
standing
so
triumphant on the burning wreck of that camper. That was a nice scene.
It's almost like the Terminator there, you know?
Yeah.
Very much so.
And but then, I mean, even then, the combat knife to the guy into the guy's head.
Yeah.
And then, but even before the vacuum form, when he snatches her into the bathroom,
it's so quick.
It's so quick because you suspect that something bad's going to happen, but you know he snatches her, and then even the scene that it's clearly they're standing on a ladder in the little RV bathroom, and them struggling, even that is really well done because you know the guy's oblivious. And it's such a tiny enclosed space. Even if you could fight him off, what are you going to do? You're trapped in there.
Yeah, not getting out.
It's funny because Jason is usually just dispatches people. But he's toying with these two. He knows they're extra annoying. So he takes his time with both of them. And he savors knife to the head guy. And the whole audience is savoring it. Because that guy's like just the super douche, you know, through the whole thing. So it's just like, yes.
I kind of liked him.
Oh, come on. The cutoff, or not the cutoff, but the jeans with the holes in them and the freaking...
It was 86, so man.
Well, it's so funny because that's what annoyed me was like all the dialogue between the teens that was 80s kid talk, that sort of... I can't even simulate it, but it's horrifying that they're given. That was not really like people talked, but it was how they talked in movies. It was the bad dialogue version of like dialogue you would hear in the Breakfast Club or something like that, you know?
Well, I mean, to be fair, yeah, the teenagers' dialogue wasn't great, but you know what we actually had in this movie? Fucking kids at the camp for once.
Yeah.
Yeah,
actually, they all live too. What the hell is up with that?
Yeah, they weren't gonna. Well, I thought that would Jason really kill a kid, though?
That's what I was wondering. I was wondering if Jason would kill kids or identify with them.
You never know.
Is this the Jason? Does this Jason have any ties to the, you know, the Jason of Friday the 13th Part 2?
Yeah.
Or is it just sort of, has he morphed into this, like, almost like the swamp thing, into like this elemental power?
Yeah, it's always been kind of the question, is would he have killed the kids? And the scene that where he's in the cabin and he's just kind of looking around. And he only notices, he only turns when he sees that the one girl is awake. To me, I've read that as Jason is, you know, this is where he grew up. He knows these parts better than anybody, and he's reminiscing. And then somebody sees him, and he feels threatened almost. And that scene then, where she then prays and is spared, there was a second part to that scene that was ended up on the cutting room floor against McLaughlin's wishes, where when Megan fishes Tommy out of the lake and resuscitates him, that same girl is seen praying that he'll recover, and then when he sputters back to life, she silently says thank you to God. And the idea that, you know, McLaughlin thought, well, obviously, apparently that was the line is like too much faith for one Friday the 13th film. That he wanted to add, you know, to show that they weren't just films about that, you know, the same old morality, premarital sex leads to death, you know, there's nothing you can do. He wanted to show, again, just something different a little bit.
Yeah, no, this, I mean, if anything, I'm getting just like being in proximity to Jason is what people do. I mean, it was weird because there's a lot of, it reminded me of the, was it three or four with the girl eating marshmallows by the side of the road, and you're like, oh, who's this character? And the next thing you know, there's a knife stuck in her.
Yeah,
they did a lot of just like introducing characters and immediate, you know, like that whole crew of paintball battle, which is actually a great sequence.
Yeah,
especially the triple decapitation.
Oh, that's so good.
But it's just like at this point, I think that's where where earlier I said pandering comes in a good way, where it was going to the audience. Hey, look at this. Here's a whole bunch of people, and they're all buffoons. And they're all going to, you know, you saw all those people, and you knew none of them were going to end up becoming the Rise of the Occasion hero. And so you knew, you got the comedy tone right off the bat that, like...
Well, you had Horseshack in the beginning. I mean,
exactly.
Come on.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And... It's just great fun, and it makes me really regret that I wasn't sitting in a theater full of people watching it, you know? I missed it the first time around.
This is a party film, so I haven't seen a screening setting. That would be fantastic.
Now, Luke, I was very careful when I was watching the kids, because I remembered the no exit joke. Did you happen to notice what comic book was being read by one of the kids on the bed when he fell asleep?
I was trying to.
Well, there at one point there's a Conan. I think there's a Power Man and Iron Fist.
Yeah, it's the Power Man. It's the one I noticed.
When he falls asleep, I think he's got a Power Man and Iron Fist. I didn't see what issue, but then later when they're all diving under the beds, there's a Conan the Barbarian as well.
Which the greatest dives ever in movie history, by the way.
Oh my God! Yeah, all those kids power dive.
It was amazing.
I'd be power diving too if Jason Voorhees is out at me. I'll do whatever you say.
Yeah, hell yeah.
But they did it all like synchronized too. It was a little routine.
Awesome.
But the other funny to me callback of this film to some of the earlier ones, you know, we talked about in the earlier films that you know, the final girl can beat the crap out of Jason, you know, in the earlier films, and suddenly he's really taking it. But the... here, Jason still gets beaten up. He just completely no-sells it. You know, people pound on him. He's like, no, I'm good. I'm like the last 3 minutes of a Hulk Hogan match here, guys.
Yeah, you have to hit him with enough power to take him off his feet if you want to slow him down. It's like, because I was noticing pistols, nah. Shotgun, buys you some time, you know.
But he just keeps popping back up. I mean, he does it so much it becomes comical.
Yeah.
You know, to keep jumping up and jumping up. But that's what he is now.
Well, it becomes Monty Python Black Knight almost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like, or when he charges right into the lake and walks out to the lake, doesn't swim out the lake to go get Tommy. It's like this is different than what we've seen, because you got Jason previously couldn't have pulled that off.
Yeah, well, I think, and which, was it the last, it wasn't the last one, was it 4 where he got his hand cut in, basically cut in half, and he's looking at it like, interesting. So I think by now he's realized, I don't need to breathe, so I'll just walk right in the lake.
Yeah, this version of Jason is just so much like a shack. I love it.
Yeah, it's
like I said, I found this a lot of fun.
Well, I noticed he wasn't diorama Jason. He didn't. There were some body parts strewn around, but he didn't put up the Rube Goldberg booby trap of bodies that he usually does. And yeah, I thought he was because, you know, he's walking around with the that was a nice decapitated body. That was a nice headless body slung over his shoulder.
And I do like the blood cabin because apparently they dressed the blood cabin originally. There was like entrails and organs all over the walls. And they said, no, that's a bit much. You got to tone that one down.
Well, you could tell they loved the blood cabin that they did two big reaction shots. Yeah, the same reaction shot of it, yeah.
It's the couple of, you know, the couple in the car.
Yeah.
You all, did everybody say the line at the same time when they watched the movie? When she actually dies and you see what floats out of her hand?
Yeah, never leave home without it.
Never leave home without it. I mean, come on. That shit's amazing. Yeah, how can you not be entertained by that?
The one that gets me every time is when Megan is driving Tommy around in her Camaro. And I do
Eddie shoves his head in the crotch.
Her head in his crotch. He goes, this is going to be a hairy turn.
Yes. Yes. Thank you for bringing that one up.
It's a hairy turn. Really? Really?
It was the 80s. I think the waxing kind of started to phase in by that point.
Well, the crotch, the quote-unquote crotch shots that they keep showing are like just those 80s jeans.
Yeah. I know, they're awesome.
Those things were so tight. You could see
yourself in them?
Outline of everything down there.
Oh, yeah, she had some polyps she needed checking out.
Nice 80s artifact at the end when all the kids are piled out. The one kid wearing the Masters of the Universe pajamas with Mechaneck on them.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
A second Masters of the Universe reference in these.
Yeah. I think I may have had those pajamas.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Compared to 5, which was, you know, such a fan-specific type of movie, you know, this really is a much more wider casting of the net to try and pull in more viewers. The MTV connection, clearly, the only direction given to McLaughlin for the heroine had to be a pretty blonde. So, you know, that was it. It's like, you can do a lot of stuff, but that's your only direction you have.
Yep.
The kids, all of it. You know, this is one that, for whatever reason, I never really saw on TV growing up. So I only saw this a couple of times, but I remember it being really, really good. And so, of course, that's why they didn't show it. You know, that's what you always say, really good one.
Yeah, 5 and 7 they showed the shit out of.
5 and 7, those were the first two I saw on USA all the damn time. But yeah, this one is, I mean, I just had an absolute ball. This is one of those, you know, my father has a theory that he described to me many years ago, and I wholly subscribe to this. You know a movie's good when you think you're maybe 20 minutes into it and you're really over an hour into it.
Yeah.
And that this movie works that way for me because it's so well paced and it doesn't really bog down. Things move really quickly and, you know, there's always something going on. And then once you start getting into the meat and potatoes, so to speak, you're just hooting and hollering the whole time on the screen and having a good time.
Absolutely.
Oh yeah,
That's the way I feel about this one.
Yeah, I hate to be the dissenting voice. You know,
I enjoyed it again,
like, you know, the last movie, I enjoyed it, but I was looking for more gore. I wanted more gore. I wanted more violence. I wanted the continuation of the Tommy thing. This does set up the nice idea of Jason being a supernatural being rather than just being a Bubba with a machete, and that's the trope that's going to carry on throughout pretty much the rest of the series. But for me, it was just a little bit of a step back. I also wanted to see some of the kids in a bit more peril. You've got, you know, this entire camp full of little kids, and Jason only sort of terrorizes one, and when she says, "What now? I lay me down to sleep." You know, he's gone. So I understand, and I don't want to take away, I don't want to be the negative Nancy here, but yeah, I wanted something more from it, maybe, and maybe that's just me this time.
That's cool, man. That's why we're doing this.
Why we doing? I mean, the film I can see where, and again, looking at it in retrospect, because of how I came into the series, it's hard to do this for me. But let's put yourself in the shoes of the guy who loved 5. And it's like, oh yeah, this is going to be more violent than 5. And Tommy's going to be, Tommy's going to be this crazy guy, and Jason's back, and all this. I can totally see how this movie was the worst movie I've ever.
Confrontation between Tom. I thought there'd be more of a confrontation between Tommy and Jason, and basically, the blonde was more confrontational with Jason until the end. So.
And that end to me is very iconic for the series.
Yeah,
I will give you that. Yeah, it does set up the idea that now Jason is just an entity in the lake, that he can come back whenever. It's just he's there.
All those little kids are swimming just above the reach of his hand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Though I do have to ask the question: if he's awake and alert, and he's super strong, he can't get any leverage. Like, okay, why can't he just pull himself down to the ground?
Slip that noose off his head, because it wasn't really a noose. It was just a loop of chain. Yeah.
Slip the chain off and walk out.
Yeah.
Because he's still a Bubba.
Is he still not that bright?
See,
yeah. Plus, they also got a propeller in his face.
That propeller is pretty cool. I mean, that's that always kind of reminded me a little bit of a scene you'd see in like Sleepaway Camp.
Although we'd already seen that propeller, that the gas tank had been emptied on that boat. Detached and emptied, by the way. Yeah. Not even attached anymore.
Well.
Still left in the tubes, yeah. By this point with these movies, I'm not going into this for a piece of cinema, because by this point, how could this movie be anything but a marketing decision? Because I don't think they were proud of this line of movies necessarily.
No, Paramount hated them.
Yeah, it made a lot of money for them. So they were, it's a little bit condescending, but at the same time, it was fairly accurate that their crowd was there to go and have a good time and just sort of party it and whoop it up with each other, and girlfriends were going to jump and so they were fine-tuning to keep the money. I mean, by this point, they're at 6. By this point, every time a Friday the 13th movie came out, every critic was like, why am I even bothering to review this or talk about it? It's a piece of crap, but you're going to go to see it anyway, just like the last one. And yeah, would throw themselves off critics' leap. And they marched on.
Yeah, well, because despite the how much critics would want to rail against these series, they kept making money.
Right.
You put together a good movie, or at least an entertaining movie on a small budget, and you sell it and make money, you can make another one.
It's on par with going on a ride somewhere at theme park. You know, was that a good ride on the theme park? Yes, it was. Did I learn anything from it? Not a goddamn thing. But well, I got excited where I was supposed to get excited. I wondered what was going to go on next when I couldn't see around the corner, and everybody was screamed and had fun together.
I mean, this film grossed double its budget in its first weekend.
Oh, God.
And it was made for about $3 million, $1986 dollars. Opening weekend grossed $6.7 million, went on to about $19.5 million.
Oh my God, it's so funny that there must have been executives somewhere getting ulcers because these movies were making money. You know?
and this was the first one of the series to get anything other than a negative review from mainstream critics. I mean, this holds, I think it's a 54% at Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, wow.
Which is amazing. I mean, it's still rotten, but that's amazing for an
episode. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's... At this point, I think they knew what side their bread was buttered on. They were looking just to make a film that was going to be popular. And you see that with the rest of the films in this cycle, where, you know, the next two films kind of follow a very similar sort of formula to varying degrees of seriousness. But they kind of still approach it from this type of very almost over-the-top sort of approach, rather than going for the gore geek horror show. It's more along the lines of trying to make something that, again, you could bring the jumpy girlfriend to.
There's nothing in there. There's going to be nothing in there really to particularly disturb you or really horrify you, you know, to frighten you.
Yeah,
there's tension.
There's tension, and then there's the oh.
Yeah, that's more what you're there for. Is oh,
yeah.
He just got folded like a lawn chair.
Oh, such a great kill.
And that scene was longer. There's more to that death, where they.
I like how sudden it is.
I do too. It really is. It's so. You know, it's one of those things where the human body ain't supposed to bend that way.
Yeah, and when you see him do it so effortlessly and so fast, it's like. Just ew.
It's the same when he twists Sissy's head off. To me, it's like.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not easy to do.
No.
Should we do the body count?
Yes.
Oh yeah, what is our body count up to?
On this one, not quite as many as the last one, but still a very healthy 18.
So wait, okay, so we're up to 51, so that brings it up to
69,
dude.
We couldn't write this shit, folks.
Nope.
Everything's just falling into place.
What's really funny is one of those deaths is the death, I said, of Martin, the caretaker, and him and the couple that was picnicking. Oh, we're going to steal the picnic basket.
Could have been 66, which would have been just as evil, pretty much.
But
almost.
Those scenes being added at the end required... McLaughlin to change the ending of the film. Now, in the novelization, and this exists as a storyboard in the special edition of Friday the 13th, Part 6, Martin doesn't die, because Martin is... There was a mention in Part 5 that Jason Voorhees was cremated. So this creates a bit of a continuity error, because there was a scene cut from this film where they say, I thought he was cremated, and the sheriff says, yeah, but some asshole paid to give him a burial. So it's supposed to be Jason and Pamela's graves there that are maintained by Martin by being paid by some mysterious third party, who is Elias Voorhees, Jason Voorhees' father. And the deleted scene, or the never-shot scene that exists at the end of the film, where Martin doesn't die, is Elias shows up at the graveyard and seems to know that Jason is not buried in that grave. And Martin starts freaking out, and you know, that's kind of how it ends. But Paramount didn't want to be responsible to introduce the character of Elias in the next movie. So they said, make it a more straightforward ending. Don't introduce this character, because we don't want to have to be forced to do this storyline.
Yeah.
I'm
thankful.
Well, you know, I mean, to me, it's interesting, because we never found out anything about his father in the films. And maybe it's just because I'm a mark for... The later Halloween films, where we get into the druids and the man in black and all that, which again was introduced, but then they never really picked up on it again.
Yeah.
You know, again, for good or ill, but it would have been a definite change of pace.
When are we going to do Halloween 3 anyway?
Halloween 3?
No, not Halloween 3. This is in Halloween 4, 5, and 4 and 5. They talk about the druids.
There's druids in
the
3,
druids.
Too. That's the only druid Halloween for me, man. Halloween
you,
3.
And, well, in connection with the Shape and the Rune of Thorn.
Yeah.
But that's for a different show. So, but again, would have, you know, how would that ending have affected the film? Such an ambiguous ending like that. Would that have left a sour taste maybe in some audience's mouth? You know, would people who didn't, particularly who maybe they hadn't seen Friday the 13th Part 1, didn't know who Pamela Voorhees was, would they even give a crap? You know?
No.
And I think the answer is no. So probably a good call, but it would have been interesting to see that. At least maybe as a deleted scene, but they've got a reconstructed version of it, which is pretty interesting.
Yeah, but you know what? If they did that, then we wouldn't have gotten Jason Voorhees versus Carrie White in the next one. sense.
Pretty much, yeah. And that's just that's another that's a whole other can of worms we'll get into in the next
one. Oh, big old can of worms. Telekinetic worms.
The best kind of worms.
Yes. I fucking love this movie.
So, anybody got any last thoughts on Jason Lives?
I'm really looking forward to 7. I'm enjoying myself. I mean, I realize that I'm not. Three movies back, I pretty much went into like, yeah, bring on the violence. You know, I'm turning off my brain 15 minutes before I even start watching the movie now. Seems to work the best for enjoyment style. And if it was a room full of people doing that, I can see how it would just be a riot, especially in the 80s. Because I think people were especially cheesy. When I went to see Rocky 2 and he won at the end, spoiler, people leaped out of their seats and were jumping up and down like that, you know, in Rocky 1 when he got to the top of the steps and, you know, going into the aisles and hugging each other. And, yeah!
Well, see, don't you wish movies nowadays could get that out of people?
Yeah, I've seen movies worthy of getting that out of people, but people just aren't going to do that anymore, and it's a shame, I guess. Jerks. It was still really cheesy at the time, but it was bizarre.
I don't know. I'm looking forward to 7 myself, because 7 I remember actually seeing in the theater, and I don't think I've seen it. I might have seen it since, but it's going to be interesting to take a look at it again and see how it holds up for me.
Oh, you mean...
Yeah, Friday the 13th.
Oh, I thought not...
What's not the Rocky box? 7.
Rocky's only got 6 installments.
No, I thought you meant the movie 7.
I've seen 7.
What's in
of
the
times,
box?
Yeah.
Don't let's not get started on 7.
Box of donuts. That's what it is. I really enjoy this one. Like I said, this is a great film to get a group of friends over to your house with a suitcase of your favorite beverage, and just have a good time. And also excellent soundtrack. Hearing it. Play Teenage Frankenstein live was a fantastic experience, and it all goes back to this movie. This is where I was introduced to the coop. So, remember the coop.
Yeah.
This movie is like a box of severed heads. You don't know what you're going to get.
Oh.
It's going to be fun, though.
It's going to have a creamy center.
Oh.
Oh. Scene.
If you shop at Amazon.com, please consider using the link at 2TrueFreaks.com to shop there. If you use this link to go to Amazon and then you shop, 2 True Freaks gets a little cut of what you buy, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. So you get to shop as usual and help out the Two True Freaks at the same time.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
We were finally invited aboard one of these spacecraft, which landed near Ann Arbor, Michigan on October the 24th of 1954. This is a drawing of the craft. As I was leaving the craft, the commander, Soltek, said, "Soon others of your people will be able to have an experience similar to this."
You're not an asshole, Chris. You're a masshole.
Hey, fuck you, buddy.
Yeah. Yeah, you got you're an asshole with a Red Sox cap on.
I know. Yeah, you know, I'd fuck it. Come up to my fucking neck of the woods. I'll drag you to fucking Revere, leave you in the fucking Mystic River. There you go. This is the masshole for you. Now I'm gonna go to fucking Dunkey's, get my crawler.
Hey, what I always just say, the one phrase I can say all the time that takes me right back to being in New York. Somebody has left their vehicle where it's not supposed to. Hey, buddy, you can't fucking park here.
No, you can't fucking park here. Move it along. Hey, like, you ask a cop in Boston for directions straight ahead.
Well, it's better than asking a cop for directions in New York. You get tasered.
Oh, shit. No, you just get shot now.